What's up, folks? The Sidelines Podcast is back on 985thesportshub.com. Back again with a new episode for myself and Ty Anderson. And just in time for hockey season. I know we have a lot of hockey fans that listen to our podcast, and we get into the nitty-gritty of the Bruins and what to expect from them this season, what we expect, how we think it's going to go, the defense, the forward group, how close are they to contending for a cup, what's the division going to be like, what's the league look like, what's our pick to win the Stanley Cup. We get into all of it. There's a lot of hockey talk, and I'm sure a lot of you are excited to hear about that. Especially if you've been waiting to hear Ty's take on the matter. You're going to hear a lot more Ty moving forward on the hockey show and things like that, but we will be talking plenty of hockey every week on the Sidelines Podcast. And we also get into the NFL divisional weekend, how we feel about the wild card and what we think the Patriots should do at quarterback, what we would like them to see, our general takes on the draft and the quarterback position and all that stuff. Get into that in depth. And then near the end, we do get into Kyrie Irving. And I find him insufferable. Anyone that follows me on Twitter knows this. And we give our quick thoughts on that. But it's mostly hockey and football, as it's probably going to be most weeks on the Sidelines Podcast. But we're getting back in the swing of things. First episode of 2021. Hope you enjoy it. Anyway, let's start the show. I guess we don't need to catch up on it. I mean, we've been talking throughout our breaks and all that, but it feels like 100 years ago when we did this podcast.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a little bit like, you know, shows will take seasons off or a few weeks off in between new seasons, and that's what we did, I guess. So here we are, 2021.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the last episode was the mid-season finale, like they do with The Walking Dead or something. When there's like 28 episodes and they're like, guys, can we have a break here?
They do that with like every show now. Like even like game shows have this now. Like The Weakest Link just went off the air for like 2 months and just came back this past weekend, which is like, all right, you're a game show. I don't know why you need to do that, but here we are.
Yeah, I thought that was the whole point of recording all the episodes, like 80 episodes in 2 days, that you didn't really have to take, you didn't have to build in breaks. You just record like a whole month's worth of episodes and you're good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how I would do it. I mean, that way you're really only working 30 days out of a year, but it looks like you're working, you know, 180. It's kind of sick. It's a good idea.
I watched the one episode of the new Weakest Link. I was interested. Didn't really tickle my fancy that much.
I just like game shows. I like trivia game shows. I don't like the ones where like you have to like pick you know, oh, this is like the briefcase that has money in it. I don't like that.
Right, that's just gambling.
That's just stupid. I don't want to do any of that. So I like these trivia game shows because I'm pretty good at them, I find. So that's exciting for me. I'm finally good at something, so I need to embrace it.
Yeah, like Deal or No Deal, that didn't last very long. I don't know if that was like a remake of Let's Make a Deal. I don't think I ever watched Let's Make a Deal. But, you know, I think the only new game show that came out that was any good is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is still on, I think.
Yeah, now it's like Celebrity Millionaire, though. Like, they have, like, celebrities on there who are playing for charity. Or at least that's what they're doing right now, for whatever reason.
Yeah. Did you ever watch when Norm MacDonald was on that? That was classic.
No.
It was back in the Regis days. He got to the million-dollar question, and he had the correct answer, but Regis talked him out of it. He talked him into walking away with just the $500,000.
Why would he do that?
And he had the right answer.
Why would he do that?
Because if he gets it wrong, he'd drop from $500K down to $32,000 or whatever it was.
But he had the right answer?
Yeah, Regis was scared. He was a scared.
Doesn't Regis know the answer, though?
Apparently not.
Jeez.
Talked him right out of it. Yeah, it was classic because Norm kept like dropping his like classic Norm, you know, dry one-liners throughout the whole thing while just blowing through all the questions.
Of course, yeah.
Like, wait, this guy's smart? It's like, yeah, obviously, he's a genius. You ever heard this man talk?
I'm a big fan of Norm on, like, award shows or anything where they just give him a mic and just let him go. Just let him go. Just let him do whatever he wants to do. Yeah. When he has the guy, when he has Super Dave on his podcast and he just keeps telling him like really offensive jokes just to like get Super Dave's reaction, it's so funny to me. Like that's if it's on YouTube, if you can find it, it's so funny because like he and the guy to the podcast with just makes Super Dave so uncomfortable with the jokes they keep telling him.
Yeah. When he hosted the ESPYs, that was great. I thought that was hilarious, but he like got booed off the stage and then they canceled him. The guy was ahead of his time. Getting canceled back in like 2003 or whatever it was.
You know, it happens to all of us. It's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah. They're going to come for us one day, Ty.
And, yeah, they already tried.
Nobody left to support us because everybody's just eating each other alive.
Yeah, they tried coming for me for my tweets from when I was 18 and I was quoting movies. So it was an okay attempt, but got to be better than that, I guess.
Was it that Scott Kasmar guy that did that? Was that some random guy?
Yeah,
that guy was.
I mean,
he came off as unhinged.
It may have been. There was. He went through like my Twitter history and just like started typing in random words, trying to get me in trouble. And one of them was thug, which was not a racial. It was not a racial.
It was an acronym.
It was an acronym for Tony Hawk Underground, which was a video game I played when I was 15 years old, and I was quite a big fan of, to be honest with you. I'll play that right now.
Crap.
I'd love to play that game right now. I got the remastered one.
I'd love to know what 98.5 The Sports Hub would think if they found out you were playing Tony Hawk's Underground when you were 10.
Yeah, they'd be pretty pissed at me. They'd be real mad. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you say something, this is how I feel about this whole thing. We've talked about this before, and I don't want to waste too much time talking about it.
Right,
but
neither do I. I know, I harp on it all the time.
If you say something, you know, now, you should get in trouble for that. If you said something in 2008, you know, when the land of humor was a lot different than it is now, I don't think you should get in trouble. I don't, because I think that's, you know, that's, it's just different. It's a different world. You know, even go back 5 years versus the things you can and can't say now. So whenever people dig up old tweets, you know, as long as you're not like dropping like, you know, hard slurs and being like super ignorant, like, you know, if you're just making like jokes, like the whole thing that happened with Kevin Hart, right, where like he was making jokes you know, back in like, I think they had tweets from like 2009, and it was like, yeah, these are from 11 years ago. Humor has changed. Like,
yeah,
like think about some of the jokes you heard in TV shows and movies back then and how you don't hear them now. It's like
even like time 5 years ago.
No, exactly.
I was watching the Saturday Night Live Christmas special, and they were showing clips from like even like 5 years ago. And I was like, they couldn't even get away with that. It's crazy.
No, exactly.
Even today, if you say something, it's like there's people that just need more out of their own lives, and for some reason they just want to tear down other people's lives. Like the Kevin Hart thing started because it was announced that he's going to host the Oscars. And so people decided, oh, he's getting a job. He's succeeding. He's very rich and famous. I'm going to go try to ruin him because I'm not happy with what's happening in my own life. You know, it's like, I don't know. I'm so sick of it. And it's ramping up after what happened last week, which was an embarrassment for America. But like now, like anyone who's even remotely associated, like people who even like condemned what happened last week just because they might hold an opinion that you don't like, oh, we're going to try to cancel those people. It's just like, it always ramps up and gets goofy when we have like a major event like what happened last week. So next time something like that happens, I would advise everybody to just not tweet. Do the opposite of what I've been doing and just not tweet about anything.
Yeah, I truthfully, what happened last week is horrible and stupid, and it's the easiest thing to condemn, in my opinion. For me, it's insane, right? But I do think now, are we going to go overboard now? Like, you know, the whole thing with, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a difficult issue to talk about, obviously, for a number of reasons. I just think that, you know, we need to get back to some semblance of normalcy here. Hopefully we do. That's felt like the fever pitch for me. Like, I can't see how it gets any crazier than that. I hope it doesn't. You know, just given temperature is.
Yeah, right, I don't think this has anything to do with Joe Biden himself, but like I think once he gets inaugurated, as long as nothing crazy happens that day, like finally finally the whole Trump thing will be in the past and we can actually move on with our lives. I mean, hopefully, I don't know. People I feel are still going to, there's going to be people out there that are still going to be obsessed with everything that goes on with that family, whether you support them or not, like on right. each end of the spectrum. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just want people to calm down, man. That's all I want. We do have hockey season, which is good. So
I assume
we're going to spend most of this podcast talking about hockey, which we can,
I sure hope so.
Which we can get to if you want.
Yeah, let's dive in. Why not?
Ty's been covering Bruins training camp all along, and they got the season opener tomorrow. I mean, I don't have any specific questions for you right now. But
no?
I gave my take in another interview on the Bruins and how my season outlook for them. You might disagree with me. I see them as a low-end playoff team, if that makes sense. They'll be in around the 7-8 seed or however it's configured. And it's not necessarily because the roster isn't good enough, but like I just think early in the season they're going to struggle scoring-wise without David Pastrnak in the lineup, and you're just going to see too many growing pains with the defense in this transition they're making that they're probably going to struggle early on. I don't think they're going to be terrible, but they're just in a tough division, I think, and I think they're going to have to fight for a playoff spot. And I think they'll be one of these like dangerous dark horse teams when you get into the playoffs. But that's how I see the season going for them. I think there's going to be a chance that they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot by the time they get to the end of the regular season. And how do you feel? Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're basically in what we would call the group of death, right? If this were a World Cup, we'd be talking about how good this division is. And it's true. I mean, you have the best winning percentage or point percentage last year in this division by far, you know, compared to the Central, the West, and you know, the Canada, the North division. That's going to be hard. Yeah, I don't think they're a division winner. I think they're a two or a three. And I think the two on my part is a little bit generous. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think the class of the division is probably going to be the Flyers. Just how I look at their roster. Carter Hart, unless he, you know, takes a big step back, is looking like he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, that's a team that they caught fire like halfway through last season, and so most people expect them to just keep rolling.
Yeah, and you look at their roster, right? And their roster, in my opinion, they have what I consider to be, you know, the pillars of being a great NHL team, right? They're deep down the middle. The Kevin Hayes signing for them was huge. Looking at the way he's played for them since signing, you know, it's only been 1 year, but he was really good. And so I'm impressed with what I saw from him. You still have Sean Couturier, who's basically like Bergeron. You have Clojure, and then you have the other guys. You know, Travis Konechny's a great player. You know, Jake Voracek, pretty good player as well. Like, you're going to get stuff out of these guys. You know, you look at Nolan Patrick, who was a top pick a few years ago. He's healthy now. Yeah. So how does that change things? Their back end, Provorov is their McAvoy, right? So if he can be what McAvoy is going to be for the Bruins, then that's a good team. That's a good team, in my opinion. So they're my pick to win the division right now. Washington's always good, as we know, but the goaltending is an issue for me. We don't know how Ilya Samsonov is going to play. We don't know. We saw it last year, but he's never been the guy. So now we're going to see. But I think the biggest thing with this division is just how can you weather the storm without Pastrnak? And how can you figure out what the defense is for the Bruins? Because those are the two biggest things. You know, it's a Rocket Richard winner and 40 minutes of top four play last year. How you replace that? You know, it's going to be hard. So we'll see what they can do. I mean, truth be told, I'm not completely sold on this defense, but I'm not damning it to hell based on what I've seen through training camp.
You mentioned Charlie McAvoy and how Provorov is going to be there. He's going to do what Charlie McAvoy is going to do with him. What is Charlie McAvoy going to be, you think? Because I think this is the year where, like, you want him to take a leap forward. You expect him to take a leap forward. He needs to take that leap forward and become, you know, maybe a Norris candidate. I don't know. Particularly offensively. I don't know. Like, how confident are you that this is going to be the year?
I think he'll get some Norris love. I don't think he's going to be a favorite. But I do think he'll finish top 15, you know, top 20. He was last year anyways. So I think with McAvoy, you're looking at about, I would say, 25 to 26 minutes a night. I really do think that you're going to see a ton of him out of the gate. He's going to be the driver. I think he's going to begin the year on power play too, but he's going to be that top pairing guy who they rely on for, you know, countless You know, I think that these pairings are going to be very, very shift-to-shift matchup-based versus,
really?
Okay, this is your role. Go out there and give us this. Like, I just think that with the way this roster looks, you could see a ton of, you know, McAvoy's getting put out there every other shift versus, you know, a full rotation here or there. Like, I just think that they're going to have to manage him a little bit, but he's such an important piece of their entire operation. Both with the breakout and defensively, that you need him out there as much as you can. So I see him logging a ton of minutes. I think mainly 5-on-5, but you know, the special teams game is where you wonder where they can add him into the equation, right? Is it power play two? Is it, I think he's playing secondary power play and secondary penalty kill. I think, but again, it's 5-on-5. He's the driver. He is the engine. So to me, that means he's going to have a ton of ice time.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's going to have the minutes. I guess the question is, what is he going to do with the minutes? Is he going to get any better than he's been? I mean, I think it's just particularly – I think it's really just about offensively. If he's going to start, you know, getting closer to 50, 60 points over the pace of a full season, obviously he might not get to that in the shortened season. But, I mean, I think that's the key because he's – I've loved what he's done defensively. His physicality. Oh, yeah. He's obviously a smart player. He's played hard. Like, he's done all those other things. He just hasn't added that offensive piece, which is weird because I feel like he's very creative with the puck and he shoots well. He has a great shot, but he, for some reason, doesn't like shooting that much. So, I don't know. Maybe you think this is the year where he starts firing away a little more?
Well, let's keep in mind that he ended last year or before the restart anyways. He ended last year. I want to say it was 15 points in his final 18 games. You know, once he broke through with that goal, that overtime goal in Chicago, he was off to the races. He was putting up a point per game, basically. So I think the truth is somewhere in between there, right? It's somewhere in between the cold spell and that white hot stretch. And I think that if he can be a half a point per game guy, the Bruins will be happy. If he puts up, you know, 40 points over the course of a 82 game season, they're happy. I do think he can give you more though. And I think that you saw that last year. And I think that his role this year, again, with the ice time and with Krug gone and with them not wanting to put too much on on Grizzlick out of the gate. I do think that he is their drive. Like I said, he's their driver now. So if he can be that, you know, last year he finishes with 32 points in 67 games. If he can up that a little bit, which I do think is going to happen, they're going to be in good shape on that right side.
I think they're in really good shape on the right side. It's all about that left side. you mentioned Matty Grizz. You said that like they're gonna like mix up the pairings a bit, but don't you think they're gonna try to roll pairs early and they're not necessarily gonna mix it up right away? So like say they like what's the starting? Who's starting with McAvoy? Is it gonna be Lozon?
Jeremy Lozon is gonna be starting with Charlie McAvoy.
Okay,
That means that you'll have Jake Sporl opposite Kevin Miller, and then John Moore is your healthy scratch out of the gate on the left side. So we'll see how that works. I do think that there are a number of factors to consider here with this defense. Is number one, Kevin Miller is not going to play all 56 games. It's just not going to happen.
No,
they're aware of that. They know that. They'd love him to, but you know, 3 and 4s. Back-to-backs, you know, hasn't played in 2 years. So he looks great. He honestly looks phenomenal in camp. It's blowing my mind watching this. I can't believe this guy is playing again and looking the way he looks.
Right. The problem is, can he play the way he plays and avoid another major injury? That's
exactly. Exactly.
Good question. So, I mean, I know, like, I'm not really counting on too much from Kevin Miller. It's got to come from these young kids on the left side to if they're going to show any kind of improvement. And I mean, and this is where Zdeno Chara comes in and his departure. Like I've said before that I feel like there's a chance that they could get better overall defensively by removing Zdeno or reducing Zdeno Chara. And I know you countered with, well, it'll be better if they transitioned him out more gradually and they, you know, reduced his role a little bit. But obviously he wasn't really interested in that. And it sounds like he has much more of an opportunity with the Capitals to have more regular playing time. So if it's either keep rolling Zdeno Chara out there for 25 minutes a night, where we see the mistakes right in front of our eyes, and we see the age and all that, if it's either that or move on from him and see what you got in the young kids. I want to see what the kids have. That's just how I feel. I'm not trying to like kill Zdeno Chara. I know people were outraged, and I initially was confused by the move. It's like they're paying all these players way more than Zdeno Chara. But like, if the guy wants to play more, then he should go somewhere else, because at some point you got to find out what you have. And I mean, maybe they do have something. Maybe Lozon is going to take another leap forward, and maybe he can be a good penalty killer for him. You know, and maybe they'll get a little faster and a little stronger, because I don't think Chara had the same level of strength that he used to have in his career at age 43. So I don't know. I'm okay with them moving on to the young defenseman. I just want to know that they're actually committing to it. That's because I want to see a long leash. You know, like if Zboril makes one mistake tomorrow night against the Devils, then they immediately yank him and put John Moore in. And like, what are we doing?
Yeah, that's sort of.
Let these guys suck if they're going to suck. I want them to let them make mistakes and see if they can overcome it, correct it, get better, all that stuff.
I mean, that's hard to do.
Where do you stand on the whole transition?
I think that they're trying to accomplish two things at the same time, which is difficult. It's hard to develop young defensemen and also win now, and that's what they're trying to do. They have two 35-year-old centers. Their best winger, not named Pastrnak, is 32. You know, their goalies are 33 and 35. And so that's the part that's frustrating for me, because I think that you're trying to appease two different philosophies here. And that's especially in a 56 game season, that's going to be difficult to do. So I'm not crazy about it, but I do want to see how long the leash is, because to your point, yeah, if by game 15, the third pairing is John Moore and Kevin Miller, I'm sitting here wondering why the hell Chara's in Washington and you're playing him eight times instead of playing him. So yeah, it's a real issue. This team hasn't been great at this before. They haven't been great at accomplishing two things at once.
I was going to say the last time they tried this was 2015 and 16, and how'd that turn out?
Exactly. You end up trading for Lee Stempniak and Drew Stafford and Jean-Michel Lyles. And then, you know, then what happens? Okay, well, you traded for Lyles and you traded for these guys, and you played Dennis Seidenberg on one knee, and turns out Joe Morrow, we don't know if he can play or not. Colin Miller, we don't know if he can play or not. You know, it's like, so that's sort of the problem that I have with that, is that, all right, are you going to let the kids play or not? And I hope they're not looking at this season and saying, 56 games, no fans, we can kind of punt on this and we can, you know, let the kids play consequence free. No, because these games do matter. The roster does matter. You know, you only have a one more kick at this with this group, I would say. Maybe
how
two,
many years in a row we've been saying they got one more shot.
I know. And that's the part that's maddening, because you
could
look
be
at
grandpa's
it,
last Christmas. You never know.
You can make up for not having NHL top six forwards. You can make up for it. Like, look at 2019, right? Like, they had a black hole in that right side, and they came one game away from winning it all because they had a deep third line with Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson. You can get away with that and still come close to winning, maybe even win the whole thing. If you have a defense that is not NHL quality, you cannot win. You will not win. You will be out in the first round. Look at the Maple Leafs. Look at the Islanders before they developed all these kids that they have now. You will never go. You will always go as far as your defense will take you. And the idea of team defense, you need that. So if these kids can't play and you don't do anything, you've shut the window. You have shut the window. And that's sort of the thing I was trying to say, is that I'm not telling you that Chara is a make or break piece to winning a Stanley Cup in 2021. He's not. But he gets you closer there. He gets you closer to that level than if these kids can't play, because that will truly close your window and you will be screwed. This season will be a waste, and you will have wasted another year of Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci and Tuukka Rask, and you just can't afford to do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, the 2019 Cup Finals, I'm not sure their defense got outplayed in that series. Like, all their big forwards, like the Matt Grizzlick, Torrey Krug, they couldn't do anything against those. They couldn't contain those bigger forwards on the Blues, and that's the same thing that I keep harping on every year. And this is why I feel like they might have a chance to get better with a guy like Jeremy Lozon in there, because he's, you know, he grew a little bit since they drafted him. He's over 6 feet now. He's got size. He's got power. He's got physicality. He's got that kind of thing, and he's got defensive acumen. And, I mean, Vakanainen is another guy that seems like he's still on the outside looking in, but he's got some size to him. He can skate. Zaboral, I don't know how physical he's going to be, but he's got some size. I just feel like that they had to move in that a little more in that direction. I think they knew that because I think in addition to getting younger and bigger on defense, they added Craig Smith, who has size, plays well 5-on-5. He's a good forechecker, all that stuff, great shot. And I think they knew they needed to add pieces like that and sort of tweak the roster a little bit. And so, but at the end of the day, even if those kids can play, it is still going to come down to the top guys. I mean, the top line obviously didn't play well at all in the 2019 Cup final. I mean, what is going on with Jake DeBrusk? What kind of player is he? What kind of player does he want to be? You know, aren't those fair questions too? Like, what's going to happen with DeBrusk this year, you think?
No, that's a fair question as well, because it seems like, again, this team is, we've talked about this before, they've nailed having one thing but not the other, right? The right side was really weak for a long time. Now it looks pretty good. Now the left side, we're going, okay, are Richie and DeBrusk the middle six pieces of a Stanley Cup winning team? You know, and that's a big unknown, because I think we've seen that with DeBrusk, right? Is that, you know, what we've seen the 27, 28 goal scorer DeBrusk. We've seen the 19 goal scorer DeBrusk. You know, the truth, again, if he can be a consistent 25 goal scorer, you're in a good spot. Yeah. It's just, how does he play that way? Can he develop chemistry with Krejci? You know, they were clicking their first year together, but since then it's been a little bit of a teeth pull, you know, getting these guys on the same page here. And I've said it before, are they together because they have good chemistry, or because DeBrusk is your third best winger and Krejci your second best center? Because if that's why they're together, they shouldn't be together. Find some actual chemistry with Charlie Coyle or something like that. So I'm curious how that all plays out. I'll tell you this, that in training camp, that DeBrusk, Krejci, Kasha line has been good. It's not scoring a ton though. In these drills, I'm noticing that they're not they're generating chances, but not scoring, which was kind of what their problem
sounds
was
familiar
in the second round last year. So I want to see if they can get on the board with some goals. Andre Kasha, I mean, he's one of these guys, man. He's always in the right spot, but like a hair too late or a hair too early. You know, he's you like what you see, but the execution is always just a touch off. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think he scored a single goal all training camp, like in any drill. I don't think I've seen him score a single goal in any drill all camp. Aside from a shootout drill. And that's a little bit worrisome. You want to see if this guy can score some actual goals here for you. So I want to see if that, you know, he can get that monkey off his back. But the movement's good. The chemistry's good. It's just, yeah, you got to get some goals. You got to do, you can't just get chances.
They're passing the eye test, but the results haven't been there. I mean, I guess that's the same story that we had last year with Kasha and other guys.
No, exactly. Yeah. And listen, they have competition though there, right? That let's say that Stadnicka gets off to a good start on the right wing. What prevents the Bruins from saying, you know what, we're going to put Stadnicka there now, right wing with Krejci, and move Kasha down or move Kasha out or move him to the off wing, whatever you want to do. Like, they could do that theoretically. So they've positioned themselves well here to have options. But you want to see if these guys, Richie and Kasha mainly, can fit with your roster construct, because you spent a lot to get them. You know, like you were the best team in hockey last year, and these were the guys that you circled as your best options to get you over the hump. So you need to see if they can actually be part of that for you.
Yeah. Like I think I said to you in a text or something that it's not Nick Ritchie's fault that Don Sweeney pegged him to be like the piece that would put them over the top last year in a playoff team. It's like, I get it. He's not that good, but at the same time, he came here mid-season, middle of the COVID season. And I think, didn't Cassie say something today about how he hasn't really had a chance to acclimate himself like he did this year, he didn't have a chance to acclimate himself last year, and this year he has. And so maybe that'll translate. Same with Kasha, I guess. But I mean,
yeah, 100%.
The pure talent though, it's not where you want it to be, but, I don't know. If he can play a little bit of a heavy game and slow down the guys that he's going up against, then I'll take it, I guess. Because I know what Charlie Coyle is going to give us. and I really like the Craig Smith edition. So
if he can be, if Nick Ritchie can be Patrick Maroon, you're happy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just a guy who camps out in front of the net, makes life hell for a defenseman, and will be physical and drop the gloves and get in your face when needed. And I think you saw a little bit of that when Ritchie came over here before the COVID pandemic stopped everything. They had that game against Tampa, and tempers were flaring, and Nick Ritchie was in the middle of it trying to get at Blake Coleman. And sure, he's picking a spot a little bit. Blake Coleman's a smaller guy, but
yeah.
Ritchie was right in there, willing to set the tone, you know, willing to do whatever it took to get the team going. And I think you're going to need a guy like him in this season, in this format. And I feel the same way about Trent Frederick, you know, that I look at this division and I look at the teams you're going to be playing, the Islanders, the Capitals. I look at those two teams, you know, just off the top of my head, two good teams. And I say, you're going to need the physicality. You're going to need the big bodies. You're going to need Trent Frederick and Nick Ritchie and Kevin Miller. And, you know, you need some of that nasty from Jeremy Lauzon and from Jake Saboro that you know they have in them. Because those teams are heavy. I mean, and the Caps add Chara. You know, the Islanders, they retain Matt Martin, so that fourth line remains intact.
Yeah, like, and there's still a Barry Trotz team. So, I mean, exactly. You don't worry about the heavy style at all times.
Exactly. So, to your point, you know, you mentioned Ritchie just slowing teams down. Yeah, you need him to grind some guys down. Just be, you know, 6'2 and 230. You know, that's enough for a lot of teams to be like, oh, my God, this guy's a moose. You know, we're going against him. If you can be that and you're not chasing the play like David Backes, great. We'll take it, you know, and I think Richie's had a pretty good camp, to be honest with you. Watching him, I think he's had a pretty good camp. Not perfect, but he looks like a fit with that line. And when you have Coyle and Smith doing so much work, you know, that really opens up the ice for a guy like Ritchie, who's a space occupier, who, you know, his job is to just get to the high danger areas and clean up the garbage. And I think with this grouping, there's going to be a lot of garbage for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, not to antagonize the fans or our own listeners, but like, I don't get, just to circle back to your point about Patrick Maroon, it's like, I don't know how you watch the way Patrick Maroon slapped the Bruins around like an absolute clown. He clowned them in that series and then laugh in the face if anyone says we could use a player like that. It's like, no, you do need a player like that. It's like, did you just start watching the NHL 3 years ago because they just started moving towards speed and skill? It's like, I got news for you. Tampa won the cup because they got speed and skill, and they got size and physicality and a little bit of nasty. They had everything. And you can't win with just speed and skill. You need that. You need to be able to finish, but you do need a little bit of the nasty. You need a little bit of the slow people down, and people are going to take this as, oh, we're going to get Linda Byers out of retirement. No, it's not what I'm saying. Just saying, you need a little bit of nasty. You need a little bit of that. You need a little bit of pushback. And a little bit of power to push back against those other big teams, and I hopefully Rich gives them that. And you mentioned Frederick too. Hopefully, maybe this is a time for Trent Frederick to emerge. You know, it's been a few years since they drafted him, and they pretty much admitted when they drafted him, yeah, well, you know, he's going to be a third line guy probably. It's like, oh, why? But you know, maybe if he can give them some of that nasty that I'm looking for, then I'll take it. And like you said, Richie, it's like, not perfect, but a good fit for that line is a lot better than what we got last year. So I'll take
that. And the biggest thing with that line now, in my opinion, that can make a world of difference is that Smith is a shooter. Smith is going to shoot. That's what he does. And watching him, he's got good burst. The shot comes off a stick real quick. He's posed some problems for his own defensemen, you know, in terms of camp drills. I mean, they know him and he's still torching them. You know, and so I look at that, and Smith is a guy who's going to make a big difference for this team. I really do compare it to Michael Ryder in 2008. You know, he comes over, he fits with that first year, he fits with Krejci and Wheeler. That's a great third line for your team, maybe even a second line if you look at their production. I think it's something similar that you have here cooking with Craig Smith. I really do think it can be a signing like that. And that'll alleviate a lot of the pressure that I think Coyle felt on that line last year, where he was being asked to carry Danton Heinen, Peter Cehlárik, Anders Bjork some nights, you know, Nick Ritchie some nights. You look through all the list of line mates that Coyle had last year, it's ridiculous. It's like 10 deep. You know, he played 15 minutes with like 10 different guys, which is crazy to think about.
He's the new Krejci.
Yeah, so I think having that consistency is going to help him a ton because he's, you know, he wants – he'll be the first to tell you, you're better when you have consistent line mates and when you know the tendencies of the guys you're playing with. When you're constantly rebuilding chemistry and learning about other players, it's difficult to have that. So I think this line will be a huge boost to this team. I think they're going to be, wouldn't surprise me, honestly, if they are your second best line. It really wouldn't surprise me.
Could be. You said 2008 Michael Ryder. What, he can't be 2011 Michael Ryder?
Well, he has to make glove saves.
Sucks. Cut him.
You have to make glove saves and all that. It's a lot of work to do that.
Right. Save a beauty.
I mean, it's, you know, I think people look at Craig Smith's name and they go, oh, he's a third liner. Yeah, but he gives you like second line-esque contributions. Like, look at his numbers. I mean, he's been one of the most productive right wings in hockey for the last 7 years.
Consistent 20-goal scorer, at least. So
exactly.
You know you're going to get that. I think that my only concern with Craig Smith is that, like, there's going to be nights where he disappears or he just doesn't produce anything, and then he'll have a night where he goes off, and you'll be like, why can't he do this every game? But I don't know. I guess that's why he's more of a middle six guy, because the finish, I guess, won't always be there. But I mean, the effort will be consistent, you think, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you will not
have any.
He's
not going to
be
one of these guys that, like, you wonder how much he cares and how hard he plays and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, you're not going to have that at all. There will be nights. Yeah, I mean, there will be nights where, you know, he does kind of disappear. He has been a scores and bunches kind of guy throughout his career. Yeah. But I would also say that Nashville team had potency issues last year for whatever reason. That team is not, you know, you look at the roster and you think, wow, they should score a ton of goals, but their power play hasn't been great particularly. You know, they had a coaching change. You know, it's just not, it wasn't the best sort of, the team wasn't the best judge of how he can play, in my opinion. But one thing they like about him is that he works. You know, he works hard. And Cassie, one of the first things he mentioned is that he loves the fact that he worked for two demanding coaches in Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette. Mm. He said, when you have those kind of coaches, they hold you accountable. And he goes, and Smith had those coaches and he thrived with them. So they like that aspect, that he knows what it takes to work and that you're going to be held to a certain standard and they're going to demand certain things. So I think he gets the message here. I really do. I think he knows the opportunity here in playing in Boston, playing with a guy like Coyle versus some of the third line iterations that you had in Nashville. I think that this is a good situation for him.
Yeah, I think they're slowly piecing together more of the kind of roster that you need to sort of break through and win the cup. But
look at Blake Coleman.
2 years ago, where it's still going to come down to, can your elite guys actually produce like elite guys? And I mean, you talk about the window, like how much longer does Captain Patrice Bergeron have left of, potting 30 goals and 70 points and all that and being that elite offensive contributor? Because you know what he's going to give you on the defensive end. But like, and then Pasternak, like, is he going to be at full strength when he comes back? Marchand's coming back from an injury. Like, I don't know. I'm a little worried that they're not going to look quite like the same dominant line, but I don't know. You've been watching them at camp. So, I mean, I'm just spewing a nonsense hot take. So, I mean, do you feel good about what you've seen at camp, at least out of Bergeron and Marchand since he's been back?
Yeah, they look great. Their chemistry is still there.
I'm not worried about. It's more physical thing.
Physically, they're moving fine. I mean, you wouldn't think that Marchand had a sports hernia repair surgery 4 months ago. You really wouldn't think it at all. He's moving like Marchand has and will. And so I think that, I think they'll be fine. For me, it comes back to the defense. And if this is the start of a multi-year project on defense in terms of building up Zboril and Lauzon, and you hope that they're Stanley Cup caliber, you know, by year three, then why is David Krejci here? You know, why is Patrice Bergeron here? You know, that's where I go back to with, like, you're trying to do two things at once, where I'm not saying you have to be a win-now team entirely. I'm not saying trade the kids for all these veterans, but, you know, if they're trying to have a project on defense while having, you know, their best forwards in their mid-30s, that's a problem. That doesn't make any damn sense. You know, so you're going to have to hope these guys are ready to play out of the gate. And if they can't, you're going to have to make a trade. And that's where I wonder what the team is going to look like. You know, I really do. And we're talking about this, right? We've talked about the leashes and the ropes and how long can you give the guys? I don't know, because how long can you give the guys? You're in the toughest division in hockey, like we've talked about. You have 56 games, so every game is worth, you know, a little bit more than half of what it typically would be in an 82-game season. So what are you doing? What are we doing here in terms of like, how long can you give these guys to figure it out before you have to make a change? I really wonder.
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like you have to sort of see it through, you know, like it can't happen after one or two games. So you got to give them some time, don't you? At least a couple weeks, see how it goes. Right.
Yeah, no, they know that too. They say that they've said themselves that they know the defense is not going to be figured out by day one of the regular season or even day 20. Like they know it's going to be a process. I just wonder, you know, if you start out 3-6, right? I mean, how long can you really give before you start looking at your options and saying, okay, is there a guy we can trade for? Is there a, you know, you go back to that 2009 team. They start out slow after being the best team in hockey or close to the year before, and they trade Chuck Kobusu and they pick up Danny Pae, and then they trade for Dennis Seidenberg and they add Miroslav Shatan. You know, it's like that team was kind of like similar that they had holes and they dressed them on the fly, and it was all kind of it was a slow process, but. You know, like they didn't have a ton of time to sit there and let itself correct, right? Like they traded Kobusu, I think after like 8 games, it was pretty early into the season. So I just wonder if there's something similar here where, you know, if they start out again, slow 3-5, 3-6, they go, okay, we gotta bring somebody in because these games are way too important right now. I just wonder again, and the whole situation with the world, maybe they don't look at it that way, but you got key guys that you need to make decisions on. Like you have Tuukka's a contract year, Corrali's a contract year, Krejci's a contract year. Like what is the plan, right? So if you're not contending, like what's the direction? That's the whole thing. I think they're a good team, but if they're not, what do they do? Like what do they do to address that? Do they break it down or do they try to build to it? Because I have no idea where they are on that front. I have no idea whatsoever.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You said, look, why are the veteran forwards still here? I think part of the concern is they don't really have much behind them. Like, at least on defense, they have these young prospects where it's like they at least have guys that might be NHL ready and we can see what they got. You know, beyond Jack Stanika, like, who do you feel good about for the long term at that forward? I mean, like, Trent Frederick is on the fourth line, and is he ever going to elevate beyond bottom six? They haven't even, like, drafted a ton of forwards, really. It's just really Stanika, and they drafted Jakub Lauko a few years, but he was in the third round, and he's obviously not ready yet. I mean, I just, like, what – they got to figure that out at some point. I mean, I don't know what – I think they have to – they almost sort of have to stick with what they have as far as all those veteran forwards right now. Because, like, say they traded Krejci, which people have been calling for years now. Who's your number two center? Like, you move up Charlie Coyle? Okay. And then what's happening on your third line? Like you're just, I just think they lack the in-house options there. And so, and that's why they're sticking to them. It's why they're, as you described it, doing two different things at once. And like, I don't know. I just think they're in a tough spot, left themselves in a tough spot, to be clear.
No. Yeah. I mean, 100%. And so how does that, I just wonder again, how does that shake out? Maybe they're great. Like we're a year ago and they don't need to worry about it. I just think that I look at this defense and I look at what you're trying to replace. You know, they are taking a Moneyball approach, right? They're saying, okay, we can't replace 50 points from Torey Krug. Can we get 50 points from three guys? You know, like, okay, well, that's not a bad way to look at it, I guess. But, you know, if you miscalculate that, that's a window shutter. You know, it's over. You know, turn off the lights, go home, everyone get out of here, it's over. And so I just wonder what the leash is for that. And I wonder how it all pans out. I've been wrong before about this. I had these same concerns last year and the year before that, where they didn't make a big move. They didn't really do much of anything besides bring it back. And both times they were a great team. didn't win it all in the end, but they were a great regular season team. So maybe my worries are just that, and they're going to get squashed like a bug. But I look at this schedule, I look at this defense, and I wonder, I just wonder that, you know, this Zboril's had good days and bad days. You know, Lozon's had good days and bad days in training camp. I just wonder how many bad days you can really afford. That's my biggest issue. I just wonder how many of those you can afford in the 56-game season.
You know, this guy's fat. He's slow. He's bald. He can't score, can't skate. His wife divorced him, and he has a micropenis. But what does he do? He gets on base. So we're going to sign him. Give him all the money. Good movie.
Basically.
Money ball. Did you ever see that movie? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've
seen that whole meeting where, like, hey, this guy's a complete stiff. This guy's a piece of crap. This guy's in jail. This guy's dead. But what do? They get on base. They made it look like that A's team was all about Scott Hatteberg. And they just conveniently ignore that they had three aces and the MVP of the league in Miguel Tejada, Jason Giambi, juiced to the gills, is hitting 40 home runs. It's like, no, they won because they had Scott Hatteberg. That's how that happened.
Weird. And it's great because you know who I didn't realize was I didn't realize that Ron Washington was part of that coaching staff until I watched that movie. I was like, wait a minute, he was? I just knew him as the Texans, the Texas Rangers manager. I didn't realize that was like what he did. So I was like, cool. So I like that movie. It's goofy, but I like that movie. It was on. Well, they added it to Netflix a few months ago, early in the quarantine. And I was like, oh hell yeah.
Yeah, it's written by Aaron Sorkin, who's brilliant. Like, and he, for some reason, he just has a knack for coming up with these movie moments that make you stand out of your chair and go, yeah, they did it. You know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like Scott Hatteberg how he does
hitting
does
a pinch hit home run,
right?
A team I don't care about.
I know. Seriously, this has been Oakland A's talk on sidelines on 95 Sports Hub. So the Bruins are playing the Devils in the season. What I love about these new divisions, which I know they're not going to stick with them, because the teams are just all playing their division this year to contain COVID. I guess not really working down in Dallas, but. I mean, I feel there's potential that we're going to actually have real rivalries back. The Bruins Flyers is going to be electric. Playing each team eight times, it's going to be awesome.
They're going to hate each other. They're going to actually. Yeah, no, and we've talked about this before. I'm pretty sure I miss the days of the old Northeast Division where you'd play Buffalo, Montreal, Toronto eight times a year. Like I with all due respect to our listeners in Arizona and. In San Jose and wherever else,
and Germany and Nova Scotia and Croatia.
I don't need to see the Coyotes come. You know, I don't need to see them twice. I don't need to see the Bruins go to San Jose and San Jose come here. I don't need that. I want more of these blood matches that you have here with your top rivals. So that's how I feel about that. I know the league doesn't feel the same way, and that's fine. But I do hope that if they can learn one lesson from this, it's okay. We need more divisional games, and we need the best playoff field possible. So just give me the best eight teams in each division, or each conference, rather. Don't give me this weird format where you have to go through your division because it's stupid. So I hope that those are the two things they learn, is that you need more division head-to-heads, and you need to just have the best eight teams available in each conference at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love the setup they're going with this year, but you just know they're not going to stick with it because it's really just because of COVID. They're not going to keep all the Canadian teams in one division. Like, obviously, that's not going to be a thing.
I'm really excited for it. When it's over, Bettman's going to go, we will now spin the wheel, and the wheel winner will get a Stanley Cup playoff. I'm like, stop doing this. Just give me a normal playoff. God.
Gentlemen, start the popcorn machine. There are the balls, and we're going to stick the ball. Who gets the ball?
And you know what's great, and this is a little bit of a segue here, I guess, but we saw the number 2 seed Saints play the number 7 seed Chicago Bears in what was one of the worst football games I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was proof. You do not need to expand the playoff fields because I think you're already letting in too many teams in sports. So just I hope the NHL doesn't look at this and say, oh, this was so great, let's make a play-in tournament. I don't want that to be a case. I don't want them to look at what happened in the bubble in Toronto, Edmonton, and say this play-in was great, and then look at this year, and I don't want this saga to walk away, the only takeaway being we should have a play-in tournament, because that's awful if that's the case.
Yeah. I wrote an entire article about beginning of this year at 985thesportshub.com because I'm in favor of more football over no football.
In favor of more football. But then you saw it.
But I don't know. Maybe less is more after watching what happened on the wild card week. There were a couple of good games. The Bills and Colts was a good game.
That was a good game.
The Ravens and Titans was pretty good. The Seahawks Rams game was a snooze. That was a disaster. Seahawks play like crap.
The beginning of
the Browns Steelers game was funny. It was hilarious watching the Steelers puke on themselves and then act like complete idiots after the game.
Right.
I mean, did you see that Chase Claypool video? It's like, all right, you're not going to figure it out if you don't change your attitude a little quickly there, young man.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Well,
not to scold people, you know, scold people, but it's just.
But here's
like,
the thing, right?
You know, you obviously don't get it. You guys don't get it. You guys always crap down your pants in the playoffs. You always overlook opponents, and like, you got what you deserve. They start the game right off with their first team all pro center just launching the snap way over the quarterback's head.
Yeah.
It's like that's Steelers in the playoffs, at least for the last decade or so anyway.
No, 100%.
An idiot, you know?
Well, you brought up something that I think is a great point, is that you said that the Bills and Colts was a great game, which it was. That was a 2-7, right? That was the 2-seed Bills and the 7-seed Colts. How often is that going to happen where the 7-seed is an 11-win team versus the Bears being, 9-7 or whatever it was and being complete crap? You know, I feel like that is going to be more common than what we saw in the AFC this year. That's why I'm against it. That's why I'm please go back. They're not going to, obviously, because it's money for them. But,
yeah,
you know, you go that 6-team format in the NFL, you know, I think we only have about 5 actually good teams in the NFL. So I already think that the playoff field is probably too big as is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just after experiencing that, watching 6 games in 2 days, some good, some bad, but I think the bad was having to watch a crap team like the 7-seed Bears play a playoff game. That was awful. That was
a lot of people's counter arguments would be the wild card weekend sucks anyway. So I mean, I don't know. I might be coming around on the idea of reducing football. I wouldn't be totally against it if they just did away. They wouldn't. They're not going to do this. I mean, I don't know what's the point of even talking about it. But if they just got rid of wild card weekend, they just went straight to the divisional round. You know, they only 4 teams per conference, because the divisional round is usually the best weekend of the year. Because now it's there's no actual crap teams in there. It's all good teams, good matchups, and that's usually where you get the best games. Like obviously the Super Bowls get all the glory, and there's all these classic conference championship games. But divisional weekend is when you get the best ratio of the number of games to like the quality of the product on the field. You know what I mean? Cause at the end of the day, the Super Bowl is just one game. But when you get 4 games and they're all bangers, like that usually makes for a fun week. I wouldn't mind if they just went straight to that, honestly. But I mean, I guess it's not going to happen. So I don't know, why am I, even
I love the idea. Honestly, I love that. Yeah, you're right. They'll never do it. We're about 10 years away from them letting the whole league in the playoffs and just letting it be like that.
Just do the playoffs all season.
Yeah, why not? You know, the
16-week playoff.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would. I mean, they're probably gonna start having bowl games and shit like that.
It's like that part of basketball. It's like the American Southwestern Division, East, Northern. There's like 600 rounds. They have the bracket behind them. It's taking up the whole studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's what I guess that is my issue with college football, is that there's just too many teams and divisions. I just can't keep up with all of it. Like I'll watch big games, but you know, I can't with all the teams and the conferences, and they have different players every year. You know, I just can't.
Yeah, no, I have no interest in college football. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm sorry. You know, people who love it, I just don't care. Too many teams, too many divisions. There's no defense, I feel, in half the games that you watch. I get why people like a 55-53 game. Not really for me, though. Not a big fan of that. I'd much rather have a nice 24-21 game.
Yeah. Sneaky boring when it's just everyone's just going up and down the field.
Ugh, like that
Super Bowl with the Patriots and the Eagles is way overrated.
Yes, that Super Bowl stunk.
No defense whatsoever. And it's like, you know, you need everybody making plays. You can't have an entire unit on each team playing like crap and have an entertaining product.
That
is
not
fun when it's just the teams playing catch the whole game. It's like, I get it. You like points. You like fantasy stuff. I'm a big fantasy football guy, but I do like to see some defense, you know, making plays. The Super Bowl against the Rams a couple of years ago was probably a little extreme, but I didn't think the game was that bad. I thought it was that the defense on both teams were making plays all night.
No, and everyone hates us because we watch that game. We watch our favorite team win the championship and go, oh, that was the most boring one. And everyone's like, oh, we hate you so much.
Oh,
like,
you child. Oh, you spoiled child.
No, to your point exactly, that's why I love the pinnacle will always be the Seattle-New England Super Bowl because you had defensive plays and big offensive plays. You know, you had
big
everything
plays on both sides of the ball on both
by
teams.
By both teams.
Up and down.
By both teams.
And then you just cap it with the most unbelievable ending of all time. Like, nothing's going to top that.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's a big one. I big fan of that of that Super Bowl. That's the one.
Yeah, I was a fan of that game as well. I enjoyed the results of that game.
It's a bold take. I know people are going to probably get on me about this, but that was a pretty good game. Not going to lie.
Speaking of spoiled, like, it did go to show how spoiled we are that, like, people act like a 7-9 season was this, like, disaster, catastrophe of a season. It's like, if you want a disaster, like, try having a different head coach. You know, like, I'm not saying this is one of Bill Belichick's best coaching jobs or anything like that, but without Bill Belichick is the reason they got to 7 wins. Bill Belichick to drag that roster to 7 wins with the quarterbacks playing as poorly as they did for most of the season, I thought was something of an accomplishment. And I'm not giving him coach of the year or anything like that. And I'm not putting it up there with 2001 or anything close to that. But, like, Bill Belichick is the reason you got to 7-9. And I'm firmly on the side of play to win the game and don't worry about, oh, no, we have a lower draft pick now. Oh, no, what are we going to – we can't draft Trey Lance now. What are we going to do? Like, what do you know? How do you really know if any of these guys are going to be any good? And that's not an argument to not draft a franchise quarterback. I think they should draft a quarterback in the first two rounds this year. But don't just draft a quarterback just to draft a quarterback because, oh, we're up here and we need him. Like, well, that's how you suck for 20 years. That's not all the suck franchises are the ones that keep gambling on the top five quarterback just because, oh, he's got the arm talent. You know, identify a guy you want and take him.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
My only argument to that is, or not even an argument to that, is the irony is that the people who want them to do that and want them to get a better pick are going to hate whoever they pick anyway. So it really doesn't matter if they pick him at 14, 13, 50, 150, whatever. You know, so that's how I look at that.
What's that Batista clip from WWE? That's not what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be the reaction thing. No matter what
I want. Yeah. I don't see a massive difference between, you know, what was the highest they could have topped out at if they lost to the Jets? Was it like 12 and they're at 14 instead?
It honestly might have been 14. Like they only dropped one spot by beating the Jets.
But yeah, it doesn't
matter. If they really want a guy, they'll trade up to get him. It'll cost a lot. But what do you care? Suddenly you care about third and fourth round picks? Like, it's people just like, they just want to be mad. They want to complain. And it's like, I get it. The Patriots were not good this year. It was a subpar season by our usual standard, for sure. But to act like they're just like this, it was this complete bleep show and like nothing went right. It's like, try being a team that won 2 games. You want to be the Jets or the Jacksonville Jaguars now? I don't get. I'll never be pro tanking. And the only way to really tank is for the GM to sort of screw, in Belichick's case, he'd be screwing himself over. But like the GM to pull a Rachel Phelps in Major League and just field the worst possible team ever. You know, like, this guy's dead. Cross him off the list. You know, it's like, I've never heard of any of these guys. And like, you just, you feel the team that's going to try to win, but they're just not good enough to do anything. And I don't know. I think Belichick's too good of a coach for that to ever happen. And it's why the whole Tank for Trevor thing was stupid. And
that's that you're never going to
catch. Who even knows what Trevor Lawrence is going to be? I think he's very talented. Obviously he can throw the ball extremely well. He's got a really quick release. Like, he really does remind you of Peyton Manning with the way he physically throws the ball, which is obviously impressive. And I think he's going to be good. He's not going to be like a complete bust, I don't think, but is he going to be this like franchise guy who goes to the Super Bowl every year? Like, nobody knows.
Nobody knows. We all thought RG3 and Andrew Luck and, you know, countless other guys are going to be that guy too. And it hasn't really panned out. And
exactly. I try to stay consistent with quarterback hype. You know, yeah, so I look at Josh Allen, who has obviously reached a different level this year and playing out of his mind. But let's see him do it. Let's see him do it next year. Let's see him do it next year when he has a different offensive coordinator and everyone has all the film on the Bills. And we'll see. The consistency is the key for these guys. You know, and like, it's like a recency bias with how Josh Allen's been playing lately. And it's like, everyone's going to act beyond on the train. Everyone's going to act like, oh, he's here. Now we're going to deal with Josh Allen for the next 20 years. Like, nobody knows, you know?
No, and no, you're correct. And the other part of it too, is that the Patriots were never going to truly tank to get in the running for Trevor Lawrence, because, oh my God, watch the Jets. Watch the Jaguars. The Jaguars had Mike Glennon starting games this year. I thought he retired 6 years ago. I didn't know he was still playing. I honestly thought he was gone.
Yeah, it was probably a tank. A nice tank attempt. They're like, Gardner Minshew is a little too good. He's kind of a winner, so we got to take him out.
Yeah, we got to bring in Slender Man over here, Mike Glennon, see if he can play. See if he can just like scare people.
Mr. Fantastic lines up over the field, and oh my God, his arm is stretched all the way to the end zone, folks.
Have you seen Mike Glennon? He looks like he looks ghoulish. Like, he looks like he would absolutely scare people. Like, he's so skinny. It's unbelievable.
Not the person you'd want to run into while you're lost in the woods, Mike Glennon.
No, I think that he's the reason I'm lost in the woods, if I had to be honest with you. I think he's the reason why that would happen to me. Okay, so who's the – they weren't going to get either Lawrence – or the other guy's name escaped me right now.
Justin Fields. Another very talented guy, but I mean, let's see.
But 14, and with the picks they have, you mentioned they can always make a trade. They should theoretically be in the running for the third best guy, which is Zach Wilson, who everyone thinks is the third best guy. They should be in the running for that, right? So why are we pooping our pants? What's going on? Why you know that's how I look at it. And if you don't get him, well, guess what? You weren't going to get him anyways, because that team is in love with him. So
yeah,
it is what it is, man. Because you weren't going to get number one, number two, or number three overall. You just weren't going to do it. You're not bad enough. Sorry, you never were.
And like, I sorry to keep harping on it, but it's always the worst teams that are up there making those picks. And like, it could change if you find the right guy. Like, obviously with like the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes is an obvious example. But, like, I don't know, Mac Jones could probably going to – I think he has, like, falling to the second round written all over him, even after the Alabama won the national title. Like, I like Mac Jones. I think he'd be a good fit for what the Patriots need. At the same time, like, you never know. You don't know what these guys are going to be like once they're actually seeing the live bullets and facing elite NFL-caliber competition every single week, which none of them have. And so, like, that's the gamble. And it's like, this might be kind of a cop-out, but – whoever the Patriots take, I'll be okay with it. That's honestly, like, my general draft take is that I don't pretend to know who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. I might tell you who I'd like to see them take, but I'm not going to throw a fit if they don't. And I'm not going to poop my pants because they didn't take the exact quarterback I wanted or the exact player I wanted. And I know that they haven't had good drafts lately, but Belichick doesn't have a bad track record with quarterbacks. Like, I honestly didn't know who Jimmy Garoppolo was when he drafted him in 2014. And, like, obviously Garoppolo hasn't turned out to be, like, an elite franchise quarterback. But I'd take him back if the Patriots wanted to sign him. He looked really good in the times that he filled in for Tom Brady a few years ago. And I don't know that he stays healthy enough to be, like, that consistent guy. But I think he knows the system and he does what Bill wants him to do as a quarterback, and I think I would like – I'd take it back. But my point is they drafted Garoppolo in the second round, and they identified and targeted a guy that they liked and wanted, and they took him. And it, I think it worked out. The guy's still in the league, got a huge contract from San Francisco, and he might end up coming back here. And he, I think he's not a great quarterback, but a pretty good one. And so, like, that's that. Like, they're going to take someone – might be in the second round. It might be a guy that wasn't really on everyone's radar. Might be not be a guy that was like hyped or highly touted. But they're going to identify the guy. Like, don't take a quarterback that high unless you specifically know that this is the guy you want. Don't say like I don't think that Bill would do this, but just don't just take a quarterback because oh we need a quarterback. Like someone's going to take Trey Lance in the top 6 or 7, and I just feel like he has it written all over him that he's going to be this. He's just going to be a pure athlete who can't adapt to all the little things that you need to adapt to be a good quarterback at the NFL level. You know, like people just fall in love with what they can physically see. They're not comfortable with the intangible stuff, but that's what sets the good quarterbacks apart from the guys that suck. So
your infatuation is based on a physical attraction. Get to know the girl and you realize you have nothing in common. It's just, that's what that is. It's that note that Barney hands to Homer at the bar. I think it was Barney anyways.
People cream themselves over arm talent every year. It happens every single year.
Well, let's
and
look,
Trevor
let's look
Lawrence at, and Justin Fields' arm talent is off the charts. It's these guys are unbelievably talented guys, but it just takes so much more than that to be a franchise guy. And this is where I thank Tom Brady for everything he did for the Patriots for 20 years, and made me realize that there's so much more to just being a good athlete and having a nice arm to being a franchise quarterback. And just that's. Yeah. You know, if everyone realized how great Patrick Mahomes is going to be, you would have been the consensus number one.
So that's what I was going to say, is that, okay, let's go back and let's look at, you know, let's look at the AFC, right? The final four. It's the Browns, the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. Out of that four, who's the worst quarterback out of the four? I would say it's Baker Mayfield. That's just me, though. I would say that it's Baker Mayfield and that their success has really been based on the success of their running game.
Sorry, which four? I missed the list.
Oh, sorry. I was saying that in the AFC, the final four. You know, the final.
Oh,
four.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the draft. Okay.
No. I'm sorry. I'm saying the final four. You know, you have Jackson, Mahomes, Allen, and Mayfield. I would say
it's debatable between Mayfield and Lamar Jackson. But yeah, I think that's a fair take.
Well, for the sake of my argument, I'm going to say it's Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick.
I can't believe how well coached the Browns are. I'm not used to this.
No, it's very odd.
It's making me uncomfortable.
It almost shouldn't be happening. I feel like the universe is just upside down.
Mayfield, though. He does have this sort of – I think he does sort of have that thing where it's like if you cross me, I will make you pay for it. You know, like maybe he's not at the elite level yet as far as executing that desire, but he does have that desire to prove people wrong and win and all that stuff. That's why I do like Baker Mayfield, even though he might come off like an a-hole sometimes. But I'll take an a-hole who plays well and comes through in the clutch and wins. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I think my Lamar Jackson takes stance. I think he's a good player. He is a good player. He's not going to be a perennial MVP candidate. I think people got a little too ahead of themselves saying he's right up there with Mahomes. And if he doesn't break off like those big runs against the Titans, the Ravens might not win that game. And he's not going to get those running lanes every week. He's got to throw the ball better.
So my point is, okay, so those are the final four in the AFC, you know, and the most sure bet was taking number 10 overall. You know, the guy I'd consider second best, Josh Allen, was number 7 overall. Mm. You know, Lamar was 32, as we all know.
And Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen were mixed in there. Mitch Trubisky went 2 overall.
Exactly. It's not an exact science. Yeah, it's not an exact – even when you think it is, it's not. You know, so that's how I look at it and say, okay, well, whatever. Now they have to find that guy. You know, they found a guy with Garoppolo. Whether or not he's legit, you know, franchise guy is debatable. But I would say that when healthy, he's a starting quarterback in this league based on what I've seen from him and from other starter
he's
quarterbacks.
He's definitely a pretty good starter when he's healthy and, you know, so in the right situation.
You know, Josh Rosen was eighth overall. He's on a practice squad right now, you know, or he was for the most part for almost the entire year. It's like, you know, so to think that higher number, you know, higher draft pick equates to automatic success is crazy. So they have to find that guy. We'll see if they can do it. You know, I think that they found some guys in the past, like, again, Garoppolo, and I would even include Brissett. based on where they took him. You know, mm-hmm. to get a guy who has started and has had decent games as a starter from that position says that, okay, you found a guy there. So I think they've – now it just comes, you know, finding that next guy. Hey, you know what? You want to give him credit? They signed the kid from Washington, Heinicke. They had him for like a month. So, hey, why not bring him back?
Yeah, that was, what, 4 years ago? I didn't even remember that. I was like, when did that happen? But then I realized I wasn't covering the Patriots full-time back when that happened, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I wrote about it because I was with the other company, I think, when it happened, and I think that was one of the ones they threw to me. You know, like they were like, oh, can you write this up? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Because I was like, why did I know?
And you're like that meme with the Husky, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a dog and a necktie at a time.
And I was watching that game, and I was like, how do I know this guy's name? I'm like, why do I know who this is? Because, like, I don't – why would I possibly know the Washington football team's third-string quarterback? Right.
I kept seeing people tweet, like, former Patriots prospects. I was like, am I tripping on acid? When was this guy on the Patriots?
Yeah, and I was just sitting there. I was like, why do I know him? And then I was like, oh, my God, that's how. He was here for, like – 2 weeks or whatever it was.
I tweeted the morning, and everyone was like, oh, well, the Patriots get a guy like that. I tweeted the morning after. It's like, yeah, you know, six Super Bowls were nice, but have you ever found yourself begging your GM to sign the third-string quarterback off the Washington football team? That's how you really have fun with your football team. Oh, man. That does go to show what the state that the Patriots are in, at least at that position. It's wild.
It is fun. That dude is now going to get Matt Flynn money. He's going to get that Matt Flynn bag.
Oh, God, really? You think so? He got legit, like, top of the market, I thought.
I mean,
and then immediately lost his job to Russell Wilson, which is like, another example of, like, I really don't know. We signed this guy to be the franchise quarterback, but here comes this 5'11 third-round pick who just has the thing. You know?
He has the thing.
He didn't play well against the Rams, which is
– Well, who's a free agent? I mean, it's Dak, but he got Haywarded, so who knows what's going to happen with him.
Jesus Christ.
Philip Rivers, Brissett, Trubisky, Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, A.J. McCarron, Andy Dalton, Colt McCoy, Nate Peterman, RG3, Matt Barkley, Nate Sudfeld, Cam Newton, Joe Flacco, Ryan Mariota. Griffin. Is he on this list?
I think he said Robert Griffin twice.
I mean,
I'd take two Robert
Griffins. No, there's Ryan Griffin. There's another Griffin.
I was going to say, I'd take two Robert Griffins.
Yeah.
They might be the super RG3.
Nick Mullins is an RFA.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Famed podcaster in New York City, Nick Mullins.
Is Mario? No, I thought Mario was a 2-year deal.
Oh, he might be. I thought he was on the list of free. Guys they might cut bait with him. Same thing with Garoppolo. Yeah. He's not definitely going to be a free agent, but he's like a candidate to just be released because they don't want to pay all this exorbitant money for guy who's probably not quite that good, but
right.
I just think I like the fit with Garoppolo. I would love it if they got Garoppolo and Brissett back, and then they drafted someone. I'd say, all right, here we go. This is going to be fun. See what happens.
So
I think they are a quarterback away from being back in like the playoff mix. Like, I think they have a lot of work to do on the roster if they want to become like a real Super Bowl contender again. But if Bill can just find the right quarterback, someone who can consistently run the offense, avoid mistakes, and occasionally actually come through for you in the clutch, then I think they'll be fine. They could be back to winning 10, 11 games and contending for the AFC East in a playoff spot. But, you know, if we want to get back to the past glory, there's a lot of holes that need to be fixed on the roster.
I
don't know what they're going to do.
If you're asking me point blank, if they have a quarterback who doesn't mistake feet for hands for 16 games,
right.
That team has 10 wins and might challenge for a playoff spot.
Right. I mean, there were so many games where if Cam Newton makes the play instead of crapping on himself at the end, then like they're over 500. They might not have made the playoffs because there were so many like 10, 11 win teams this year.
Yeah, but they would have been better. I mean,
it just goes back to my point that it wasn't a disaster season. It was bad. It wasn't good. But it wasn't a disaster. They were just they had too many holes in the roster. The quarterbacks didn't play well, and like the coaching, their preparation, and the elite special teams is what kept them afloat. And the defense had some moments, and like it's just if they had a competent quarterback, they would have been in much better shape. And I think Bill knows. I think Bill knows he needs to. He can't just dive off a dock in the Bahamas or wherever the hell he was, Cabo, and then just sign Cam Newton on July 1st and then just roll out of bed and get right back in the playoffs. I think he realizes he needs to make real moves. And so I think they will. I think you'll see at least one big free agent move from them. They might not sign the most expensive guy, but I think day one you'll see them make a Stephon Gilmore type signing. I think he knows he has to, and they're going to have the space. He's been making all these excuses about the money, so it's like, okay, now you have to spend and make a big move there. If they're saying the reason the roster sucks is because you're cash strapped, you know. So I hope people recognize that and call them out for it if they don't make some big moves to upgrade the roster. And I mean, early in free agency, not in the scrap heap.
So I was actually going to ask you what is the perfect sort of contract in your opinion for Jimmy Garoppolo? Like if you were going to bring him back, let's say the 49ers cut bait, they take the out that they have in front of them and they cut bait. What is a contract that makes sense for Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it
years 30? Mariota type deal, 2 years, yeah. Maybe a little more money because he has more like of a pedigree, more accomplishments on his resume. So maybe like 2 years, $30 million or something like that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I land on. Like that makes the most sense too because it gives you a 2 year window here to either find the next guy or Garoppolo to reestablish his market value and to either sign a long-term deal again or just cash in elsewhere. And
yeah,
that seems like the play, right? Like whoever they get next, I want it to be a multi-year deal. I don't want the Patriots to become the revolving door of quarterbacks where it's a new starter every year and you're re-implementing systems every year.
No, that's how you're 7-9 for 20 years, like I said
before. Exactly.
So it's not going to, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, exactly. I mean, but that seems like it's their best play, right? Like I don't really want, I know that we've talked about this before. I think we've written about it before, is Matt Stafford. I'm kind of good with that. I don't really want that.
I would love Stafford, honestly.
No, he's a gamer. He's tough.
He's got to be, he would have, not as a long-term obviously. He'd have to be the stopgap. He'd have to be the bridge guy.
Yeah, and I just wonder if you can get more than one good year out of him, given the mileage and the injuries on his body. I mean, that's, he's been through hell, right?
That's so, a fair point. It's because of the sucky Lions.
Yes, exactly.
I feel like he spent more time lifting the sucky Lions out of obscurity than he has hurting that team. Like, I want to see what he does in a real program. not that they have all these great weapons, but that guy is tough and clutch. That's what I'd love about him.
No,
if they make that move, I would love it. But I'm not gonna, you know, hold my breath for that. I don't think that's gonna happen.
And I also look at too, like one of the things about Stafford that I've liked and appreciated is that toughness, but also he's had some damn good receivers over his tenure there. Like he's had some really good receivers between Calvin Johnson, and then you had
Golden Tate for a while.
Golden Tate,
Kenny Galladay is really good.
Galladay, Marvin Jones,
he's pretty good.
I think he's damn good. He was underrated for a long time. Now he's probably out of that realm, but. But you've had he's had weapons. So I don't know, like you ask a veteran Stafford who's been beat up and what did he play through this year? Like what was it now? Like wrist tendons or like he had tendons or something?
And I thought it was a back injury.
Yeah. It's just always something with him. So I just wonder if you get the most out of him saying, Hey, Stafford, here's, Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry. And this isn't to disparage them. I just wonder if you get the lift necessary to A, make Stafford be like, all right, this is much better than Detroit, and B, you know, become a playoff team again. I just wonder. So I'd rather go younger this time around, and that's where I land on Garoppolo or even Brissett. I wouldn't hate Jacoby Brissett being the quarterback of this team. I really wouldn't. I it's not perfect, but it's better than what I've seen this past year, in my opinion.
Well, if they take a quarterback in the first round and then Brissett is like the bridge guy competing with Stidham, then that's a better situation than what you have right now. That's for sure.
I know. I just wish that somebody on the Patriots or from Newton's camp would say, yeah, no, we're going to go our separate ways here. This was great, but we're going to go our separate ways. Like it's obvious that I feel like it's obvious that it's over, but like no one wants to just say it. Like that new report that came out from Jacina Anderson, where she's like, oh, they're a long way away from this decision. It's like, no, we're not. It happened 2 weeks ago. We know the decision. It's over. I don't want any more of this. Nobody wants any more of this.
Bill doesn't want any more of this. He you know, Cam has been a great teammate and all that, and he's played ball with him all season long. And Stidham obviously just wasn't – he's just not good enough, I don't think, at least not at this point in his career. And so Bill said from the beginning, like, I'm just going to start him every year, see what happens. And obviously it didn't work out, so we're going to go in a different direction. I think that's – I'm fine with that. I mean, I'm not okay with what happened this past season. I think they are going to go in a different direction. I think – Bill might have officially lost it if they just re-signed Cam Newton and just do that again. But the guy physically couldn't throw the ball. He couldn't make a simple 10-yard pass. It was crazy.
His
decision-making was awful. He never came – he rarely came through. He had one clutch moment, that one win against the Jets on the road was his one clutch moment.
Yeah, and I feel bad too because you know, he tried hard. He said all the right things. He did all the right things. But, I mean, he's just cooked. I think he's cooked. Yeah. And that shoulder surgery turned out to be a mother. You know what I mean? Like, it just completely changed the way he throws the ball, the way he thinks. And he can't really get away with all the stuff that he was able to, you know, when he was younger. So, you know, I think that's a big problem. And I don't know. I think a team would be crazy to sign him because I don't think he wants to be a backup. I mean, Jesus, you saw when they pulled him from that game. I think it was the Buffalo game. They pulled him in the second half and he just looked like he was just like, get me out of here. Like he wasn't rah-rah Cam the leader. He was kind of reverting back to, you know, Cam towel on his head, just not disengaged. And it was like, oh, this guy doesn't want to be a backup. And you get it. You understand why. Prideful guy. But if you can't make a throw, you're not going to be a starter. Like, that's just how it is. I don't know. Like, it can't right. really explain it any more than that.
He said on the other station in his, like, last interview of the season, like, I still think I could be a starter. It's like, good luck with that, dude. Like, where are you going to go? Where are you going to go be a starter at this point? Everyone's got a young quarterback, and, like, the Jaguars and Jets are going to have young quarterbacks that they just drafted at the top of the draft. It's like, where are you going to go where you're a starter beyond, like, what Tyrod Taylor was this year for the Chargers? Like, you'll start the season as a starter, but – as soon as you start to suck, which is going to be very soon, we're going to put the kid in.
Yeah. No,
so, I mean, maybe if they brought him back and that was the deal, like we're going to – like if the Patriots drafted one of these top quarterbacks, if they ended up somehow with Zach Wilson or something like that, and he's looking good in camp, but Cam is just ahead of him in terms of knowledge of the offense, and they say, all right, we're going to start the season with Cam, but he's going to have a short leash, and then Cam, throws the ball into the guy's groin. And they punt in the first three possessions and like they're losing 21-0 to the Bills. It's like, okay, now we got to see what the kid can do. So, I mean, maybe if that's the situation, then maybe that would be an easier pill to swallow, but I don't know. I think they're moving. I think at least Newton and Hoyer will be gone. You know, I don't know about Stidham. I think they might still want to see what Stidham can see if Stidham can take a step forward because he's not making – it's not like he's making any money.
What's your read on that? Like, I'm curious what your read is on that. Like, why didn't they give him more of a look this year? Or a look, at the very least, when they weren't down by 20 in the second half and needed to score on every possession? You know, like was it just simply – you think there was a handshake agreement there with Newton where it's like, hey, if you take this lowball money, we promise we won't dick you over, basically. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think that's
like,
part of it.
I think that's part of it,
but I think it's also that Stidham's just not good enough. He's not consistent enough. He's not dependable enough. Like he had little flashes, like in the Chargers game. He threw a touchdown against the Chiefs, but like other than that, like the guy, his decision making wasn't good. The knock on him going into the draft and why he fell to the fourth round is he doesn't perform well under pressure, and I think we saw that again this year. It's like there were times where they brought him in because they were getting killed and Cam was sucking and Stidham was even worse.
Yeah.
You know, so like I think it was the Bills, that second Bills game where they brought in Stidham and he was even worse than Cam Newton. So it's like, what are we doing here with this 25-year-old who actually can physically throw the ball, but somehow he's worse than what Cam Newton's been. So mm-hmm. I think that's just, I just don't think he has it. I mean, maybe he'll flip a switch, but I just don't think we've seen enough to be confident that he's going to do that.
Interesting. Yeah, because obviously, I mean, from my point of view, I look at it and say, what the hell are we doing here? Like, this is this is banana land. This makes no damn sense to me.
That's why it would make less sense if they drafted a highly touted prospect in the first round and they're still pulling the same stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I feel like it does fall on Stidham not being good. If he was any good, they would have put him in.
Yeah, and we also went from, you know, I think this was the hype machine, right? The offseason hype machine is, oh, they think he can do this. You had his college coach praising him. You had countless, you know, executives throughout the league, anonymous, saying, oh, they think he can be the guy. I think he can be the guy. You know, Bill had glowing things to say about him on draft night. You know, like, it just felt like there was a big hype train that never left the station. So to me, sitting here saying, why is this hype train not moving? It was maybe just the reality is that he's just not good enough. You know, he's not a strong thinker. And we definitely saw that. I mean, we saw that Jesus with his first pass of his career, right, was an interception, wasn't it?
Right.
With the Jets, you know, during the 2019 season. So, yeah, I just wondered. I mean, I didn't know if it were, you know, in your opinion, if it were they were doing Cam a solid and trying to give him the best shot at getting a job beyond this year, or if it was just, hey, he's not good enough. It sounds like it's a combination of everything, though, honestly.
As with most things, that's definitely a combination, but I think if Stidham were good,
we actually had
a future here. Bill would have said, sorry, Cam, but I got to break my promise. I got to turn my back on you because we're trying to win games here. So Bill would do what he can to win the games. And to your point about the Josina Anderson report, if we're not in it already, we're entering what we call the lying season in the NFL. Basically, whatever reports come out, just assume the opposite. So, like, we've had three straight years of the Patriots being in on Lamar Jackson. Oh, they might trade up to get Baker Mayfield. Don't believe the opposite. So if you start to see reports from, like, Ian Rappaport, Schefter, those guys, they're saying, you know, the Patriots might like this offensive lineman. I don't think they don't feel great about this quarterback class. Bill's not buying into the quarterback hype. They're taking a quarterback first round. That's going to be my read on the situation. I just reflexively, whenever whatever report comes out, I tend to believe the opposite. So you'll see a lot of that coverage on 985thesportshub.com, by the way. We'll have a nice lying season section for you.
Maybe a
nice tag.
We're going to have to tag that. Lying season.
Hit it with the old, lying season, : here's what Bill Belichick is shoving up Adam Schefter's keister today. You know?
I love it. I want more of that. Let's do that.
It's fun. I like rumors. Rumors are fun. And so that's why I like the Deshaun Watson rumors too, even though that's probably never going to happen either.
The thing with rumors, if you just look at them as rumors and don't think that they're all going to happen, your life becomes way more fun.
Right. You get way less angry, way less complaining on Twitter.
Like, there are
just
people
just take
who,
it for what it is, you know? They're throwing that out there, and they say, oh, that would be fun, and let's have fun with it.
And then you write about it, you say why it sucks or why it's good, and then you get on with your life.
You move on with your life, exactly.
You eat lunch. You have a nice night.
Have a nice chicken salad, you know?
Yeah, you take a shower. You do things that people in society do, you know? You
play a nice video game or something. You know, call your mother.
I have been playing – I don't even like golf, and I am obsessed with this 2K golf game. Oh my god.
Really?
I play it every day. I don't even like golf and I love this game. It's so fun. It's so relaxing. And then you just hit a ball and it goes super far and it's like, wow, well, that's great. And that's what I do now in my life. But I'm not writing as I'm just playing 2K golf because I can't go outside as we're in month 100 of the apocalypse, I'm pretty sure. So here we are.
I have played Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild for like 460 hours. It's getting ridiculous. I'm on my second playthrough, but that's the kind of game I'm into. And at this point, it's really the only way that I can escape all the bullshit that's going on in the world is to immerse myself in a video game. So that's what I'm going to do, and I will apologize to no one.
Oh, why you gotta apologize? No need to apologize. This is what we do. This is what we do. We're saving the world by not going outside. So here we are.
It's like I walk up to someone as Link at just a random temple, and it's like, I'll tell you the secret, but you need to go denounce Trump on Twitter. It's like, oh, Jesus. Did you add that after the fact? What is going on?
Before we get out of here, there is one thing I want to talk about.
Oh, boy.
Not one thing. I mean, it is just hilarious.
Oh, no. I don't know where you're going. This is why this is a fun podcast, folks. I have no idea what the hell Ty's about to bring up.
Kyrie Irving, a full-on crazy person, huh?
Oh my God, we really gotta get into this.
No. I don't want to get into this. I just want to say that I thought this was gonna fail. I did not think it was gonna fail after what, 10 games together with Kyrie and KD.
It's been like 10 minutes.
Unbelievable! This is unbelievable that this is happening. And you know what? Listen, when you have Stephen A. coming out and just saying you should retire, that's when you know that, like, all right, everyone's done with this guy. Even Stephen A. is like, nah, I don't want to do this anymore. You need to retire.
Yeah, he had an epic rant today, right?
Yeah, he's done with it. He doesn't want to talk. He is tired of talking about this guy. Everyone's tired.
This guy, it's like, I'm at the point where, like, I assume he has some sort of bad mental health problem going on, like depression or bipolar or something like that. And it's like, I get it. If you need time away, that's fine. But just disappearing doesn't help anyone. Doesn't help yourself. Doesn't help anyone around you. And if he needs help, I hope he gets it. That's the thing. It's just the guy is insufferable. When he does talk, he makes it so hard to like him. And, like, there's so many people here who have either lost their jobs or they're between jobs or they're struggling financially in this time. This guy can just walk away and say, I didn't feel like playing. I don't get how anyone could defend that. How could that reflect well on him at all? I don't get how anyone could watch that who's gone through stuff in the last year or so, or even before that, and root for the guy. Unbelievable. And when he finally does come back, you know that he's going to have this long-winded, convoluted word salad that we've talked about before. And it's just, I don't know. I'm so sick of it. I'm glad he's not here, though. I'm glad he's not on the Celtics.
I think, one of my reasons for not liking it or why we don't have people, you know, condemning him more severely or more harshly is the thing you mentioned, the whole mental health aspect of it. But I think a huge problem in that league, particularly its media coverage, is that the media wants to be friendly with the players. Like, the players are the cool kids. Like, an NBA player has swagger through the roof. They are so badass. The things that they can do, like the things that, like, they say, the way they dress, you know, like, everything they do is awesome, you know? And I think that what happens is that a lot of time the media who covers that league, they want to be close with them because they're awesome and you want to be around awesome people. So nobody's ever going to say, hey, this guy's a dick, even though he definitely is. You know what I mean? Like because you can't torch that relationship. That whole league is built off friendships and relationships. And it even extends now to the people who cover the league, where you have a bunch of nerds, basically, like us, who get to cover the NBA and be around these athletes full time. It's the coolest shit in the world. Why would they ever talk about them in a negative light? You know what I'm saying? Like, that is the one thing I notice about the NBA and watching it and writing about it is that, and I'm not trying to, like, shit on NBA reporters. I know quite a few. I'm friendly with quite a few. You guys do good work. It's just, I find that the harshest critics of people in the NBA are the former players and the talking heads on TV.
The Kendrick Perkins of the world are the ones that are willing to stand up.
Yeah. Like, I almost never see the truth. Yeah. You never see like a, even Shams won't really do it. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't do it. And
that's about access. It's the same with everything. Like, you're not going to get access if you're being an a-hole all the time. Like, we saw with Manish Mehta getting removed from the Jets beat because he did things that even he admitted that he did in that interview with Toucher and Rich. You can get it at 98bythesportshub.com. But it's like, it gets to a point where it's like, you might get cut off from your access because you're not playing ball. You're not being a professional.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, hey, it is what it is. He's Brooklyn's problem now, but it's funny to watch this just, I mean, you know, we were all dubbed bitter Celtics fans and we were just like, oh, watch what happens.
I was not the least bit worried that Kyrie would shove it back up the Celtics. I thought he would definitely go off the rails at some point. I just didn't think it would be so soon.
No, I mean, and it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm with you in the sense. I hope, you know, if there is something going on, I hope he figures it out. But man, he makes it almost impossible to root for him. Even if you're a diehard fan, he makes it so hard to just, even when he does something right, you're like, what's the motive here? You know, what happens here? You know, it's, It's crazy. But hey, it's NBA.
Yeah, like I deal with crippling anxiety most of the time, and I have issues with that I've been open about. But I still get up and go to work every day. Like every now and then I might need time off, but I go to work and deal with the things at the same time. You know, it's like I wish I could just walk away and be set for life still.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
And it's like, it's just hard to, I don't expect sympathy from anybody. And so like this guy shouldn't expect sympathy from anyone either. He's a millionaire pro athlete who everything that comes out of his mouth is insufferable. And like, he's just not likable at all. And now he's AWOL. And like, it's unfair to your teammates. It sort of goes along the lines of like guys that like, that they skip media obligations or they say, like, I'm not talking to the media, which by the way, Kyrie also did. And it's like, well, that's not fair to your teammates. Now your teammates have to answer for you. And they're putting up with all the stuff that you consider to be BS. You don't have to like it, but now your teammates are bearing the brunt of it. Like all the Nets have had to answer questions about Kyrie for how many days in a row now. And they probably tell him, like, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on.
Right. No, 100%.
Not fair at all.
He's throwing his teammates to the wolves, you know, right. which is it's crazy. And the thing that got me.
And there's a problem that he could have solved with, like, one Instagram post to explain what he's doing. But the thing with Kyrie is that you know it's not going to be something that's coherent and, you know, something that makes sense. That's the annoying part with him.
No, and what got me is Steve Nash last night saying that he was asked if he thinks Kyrie's going to be back next year, and he went, sure. No one has ever said sure and been happy about saying sure. You know what I mean?
Everyone's right. Like, I was going to say, like, well, what was his tone? But if he just says sure, that can't possibly be positive.
No, no one, sure. like I said, no one has ever said sure and been happy that they're saying sure. It's always like, yeah, I guess, whatever. It's
Steve, your voice went up when you said sure. I don't think you like this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He touches his forehead. He's like, yeah, I don't know, man. I just, why don't I just stay retired and just have a nice life?
It's like, yeah, well, you know, the Chicago Bulls are a good team. It's going to be a big challenge for us, and looking forward to the game. Hey, Steve, do you think Kyrie will be back? Sure. Yeah, why not? Yeah, we'll see.
Just shrugs. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So that's Kyrie land, everybody.
Yeah. That's probably 10 minutes too much. To devote to that guy.
Sometimes I have to scratch the itch. Sometimes
I wish I knew how to quit him, though. I wish, because when he comes back, same. I will watch that video. I will listen to the press conference. I will see what he has to say. And the world will be watching. And hopefully everyone will understand, finally, what Celtics fans were dealing with for a couple years. And it's like Cavs fans probably didn't have to deal with it as much because he was under LeBron. You know, he wasn't supposed to be the guy. And like these... supposed to be the guy since he's been to the Celtics and now the Nets. So everyone's finally getting a taste of the Kyrie Irving experience, and it ain't fun.
I mean, what a crime it would be, right, for this guy's career to basically, I mean, it's not over, obviously. He's like 27 or whatever he is. But, you know, if his career goes on the way it currently goes and he only won one championship while playing with LeBron James, then Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and then Kevin Durant. Oh my! What an absolute waste of talent and resources by all the teams involved. Sure. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see.
All right. Well, I mean, I think we can leave it at that. Is it time for your nap? I don't know.
No, dude. This is coming out when? Tomorrow?
Yeah, I think I'll put this out Thursday morning. It's Wednesday right now as we're talking.
It's folks. Wednesday afternoon, and we have a hockey triple header coming up here, and I am so excited.
I cannot wait. It's going to be so fun.
From 5 p.m. to, like, midnight, I got to call my doctor. It's for more than 6 hours. This is
I mean,
crazy.
You talk about too much sports. The bubble, the first round of the bubble, the play-in round, was probably too much.
Yeah,
I think it was Emily Kaplan from ESPN who said that we're getting hockey literally every day for, like, 4 months, so... good stuff for hockey fans. Just please keep COVID under control. Don't be like the Dallas Stars. It's all I'm begging. I think the Bruins are professional enough and responsible enough with all their veterans that they will keep it under control. But, I mean, it's looking bad in the NBA. Hopefully they don't have to shut down. And hopefully hockey goes off without a hitch. We'll see. But, Bruins season opener. If you're listening to this, the season opener is tonight. Devils, Bruins. It's going to be fun. Ty, do you have any last final thoughts before the start of hockey season?
Vegas Golden Knights, Stanley Cup this year. That's my pick.
Okay, that's my pick as well. I said in my other interview that I'm picking the Golden Knights. Alex Pietrangelo, biggest pickup of the offseason. They were already loaded, so time to see the Vegas train. Vegas, baby.
Yeah, I want to lean Vegas and Flyers. I don't know, but maybe we get a Vegas Capitals rematch. Maybe
I was just going to say that, yeah. I guess that would be my prediction.
Yeah, they named a captain today, too. I don't know if you saw that. Mark Stone is now their new captain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so first captain in franchise history.
Wait, really who was their captain before?
They didn't have one. They just had alternates.
Oh, they just didn't have one. Oh,
okay. They had like a team-appointed captain, but he didn't wear the C. It was Derek
Engel. I thought like Pacioretty was the captain.
No, I thought he was going to be. I thought that that made sense for them. But Mark Stone, great pick. Still wish the Bruins got him in 2019. That will always be my hang-up. If that happens, yeah, they win the Stanley Cup.
Right. I'd probably take 8 years of Mark Stone over all these prospects that might never pan out. So I agree with that.
I would take the cap jail. I would be like, yeah, whatever, figure it out. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been Final Thoughts that turn into another bit of rambling. It's the Sidelines Podcast. Thank you very much, guys. Time for hockey season. Thanks for listening. If you made it this far, I mean, you're a diehard fan and I love you. So I appreciate you. We are back. We're going to have more podcasts coming for you. Might have other podcasts that aren't Sidelines coming out.
Stay tuned.
Big market tease. We're still working on that, though, so time will tell. But to Ty's 13 fans and my 2 fans, thank you very much. It's the Sidelines Podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.